Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for November's Emergency and Critical Care Club webinar. I'm very pleased to introduce you to our speaker for today, RCVS and European Specialist in Small Animal Surgery, Daniela Murgia. Thank you, Daniela. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much. Welcome everybody to this webinar on management of the post-traumatic damage post-traumatic thoracic wall. So to start with, we need to think about that thoracic wall trauma is relatively common in dogs and cats and may occur as a result of blunt force trauma such as motor vehicle accidents or falling from a height, or in some cases after attacks by other animals. But there are also penetrating injuries resulting from knives or projectiles and foreign bodies, which can cause disruption of the thoracic wall integrity. Although the risk of damage of intrathoracic structures after blunt force trauma is high, surprisingly few patients experience serious injury to the thoracic wall itself, and only 16% of dogs experiencing blunt force trauma were diagnosed with chest wall trauma in one study. So basically, the emerging experience currently is that thoracic trauma severe enough to cause rib fracture in dogs and cats is likely to be associated with serious intrathoracic surgery injury. One important point when we handle this patient is the triage. Thoracic injury following a trauma is a leading cause of small animal death. And therefore, a systemic approach to the care of traumatized patients will save lives in many cases. It is outside the scope of this lecture to cover the ABCs of emergency care, but it is important to utilize a team approach, at least when possible, 2-3 people are necessary for a successful resuscitation. But it is also essential that clinician and the team as a whole are familiar with the resuscitation procedure. So with this slide, I would like to invite you to consider where it's possible to run regular crash drills in your practice, in your surgery, so that everyone is confident about their role within a critical case. So in human medicine, the triage is subdivided in 3 important phases. We have the first period, which is called survival hours, which is the period during most deaths occur due to the accident, and usually are unsalvageable injury to the respiratory and cardiovascular system. The big question in this phase is whether the patient will survive even the journey to the hospital. Then there is the golden period, which includes the next 2 to 4 hours after the trauma, which is the most common presentation also in the veterinary hospital. In this period, the prompt aggressive treatment can make a in this period. And then we have the following 3 to 5 days after the trauma, which is the period where it's possible to recognize hidden injuries, injuries that we haven't spot at the beginning, which can be insidious, and it's also the period where possible organ failure or even sepsis can develop. So beware that clinical signs are not present in over 75% of dogs with injuries documented by radiographs or blood gas or electrocardiograms. And keep in mind that the fractures of ribs in the cranial thorax has a mortality rate of 36%, while the pulmonary contusion is present in 55% of the thoracic injuries. So the patient is the priority, not diagnosis. This is the title of this slide, because we need first to stabilize the patient, to we need to try to save the life if this is at risk, and therefore we need to focus on providing supplementing oxygen, placing a venous access and IV fluids. With thoracic trauma, patients might be brave, better or more comfortable in sternal recumbency. Don't rush into X-rays to take radiographs, because this might deteriorate the situation of the patient. So maybe if you have an ultrasound, better if you use the ultrasound and to check if there is free pleural effusion, if there is pneumothorax or an abdominal or a diaphragmatic hernia. Then you can also do blood gas, and pulse oximetry is very helpful. And as you can see in this slide, we have what we call a respiratory drawer, which is a drawer where we have all the emergency intubation kit. So you can create something similar in your surgery and place it in a drawer or somewhere where you are. We know where these things are, so that in case of an emergency you don't waste time in looking for this material. And obviously sometimes you need also to perform a thoracosynthesis to remove the free abnormal here. Oxygen supplementation is the basics. These animals can decompensate rapidly, and any additional stress could therefore be life-threatening and lead to increase of the respiratory rate and oxygen requirements. So therefore, first step is supply oxygen. This can be achieved very easily using oxygen masks, which are inexpensive, easy to administer, and you can also use the flow-by, and this method can achieve high inspired oxygen. However, you might need to constrain a bit the patient if it's awake, and some of them do not tolerate this kind. The coolness of the oxygen might bother the patient themselves. And alternatively, you have the possibility to, if you have a small pet, a cat or little dog, you have the possibility to use an enriched oxygen environment, like an oxygen cage on the left side of this slide, or a neonatal incubator on the right side of this slide. The advantages of these enriched oxygen environments are that these are not stressful. There is a high inspired oxygen concentration that can be achieved, and there is humidity and temperature control that you can really adjust depending on the requirements. The disadvantage obviously is that they are expensive, but they can be also there can be a waste of oxygen every time we open the door or open the incubator. There is a waste of oxygen, and also the supplementation of oxygen is interrupted anytime we open it. So then once we have stabilized these patients, obviously we should try to understand what's going on. So patients that have experienced a thoracic trauma should be carefully evaluated for flayed chest, pulmonary contusion, remember it's in 55% of cases, or pulmonary laceration, or even diaphragmatic rupture. Skin lacerations in the thoracic region should be examined for deeper wounds that might communicate with the pleural space. Think about dog bite injuries. They can be particularly severe because the canine teeth, that after they have penetrated the skin, they can go deeper and into the chest wall. I've seen dogs with chunks of lungs bitten by dogs. And sometimes the skin, despite the bite wounds, the skin may remain intact, except for a few puncture marks. So these are the most dangerous, because we believe from the outside that everything is not so bad, but then once you explore below the skin, then you find a disaster. So surgical exploration might reveal full thickness tears of thoracic muscles, rib fracture, pulmonary perforation. So I do recommend to explore also the smallest injuries, unless you are very confident that there is nothing underneath. The pneumothorax is a common finding after thoracic trauma, and should be drained percutaneously, and eventually you might need to place a chest drain. This because the thoracic wall injury in itself might not be that compromising, but what can compromise the survival or the respiratory pattern of your patient is the presence of pleural effusion, pneumothorax, or lung injury. So what does this mean? It means that a penetrating injury of the chest wall does not automatically signify that surgical exploration is warranted unless there is evidence of ongoing hemorrhage, pneumothorax, or sepsis. As I said, I would like to reiterate the fact that if you are in doubt and you see a little small perforation or puncture, but you are not convinced, that better to explore than to ignore it, even because exploring it, you can also flush it better, the tissue in deeply. Patients with penetrating injuries should undergo routine stabilization, as we discussed, followed by diagnostic imaging if they are stable sufficiently to determine whether there is a damage of to the lungs or mediastinal structures or the ribs themselves. And in some cases, you need to do an emergency thoracotomy, this has, even in human medicine, has a very high mortality rate. Think about it can go up to 99% of the mortality for blunt trauma and 91% for penetrating injuries. So therefore, the decision to proceed to thoracotomy should be taken very carefully. So this is, for example, a patient, is a pincher. Let's see if we have the video here. So this dog was bitten by a bigger dog and was presented with a costal fracture and pneumoderma. So you can see the breathing pattern actually is not very dramatic. So let's see if I can show you. No, I cannot show you with the. So the breathing part is not very dramatic, but there is a minimal flayed chest movement, but there were no open wounds apparently. And the question was here by the referring vet. I received a phone call in the night. So what to do with this dog? Does the dog need referral? Do I need to open the dog? So you see clearly in the X-rays, I'm struggling with the arrow. Sorry, just a second. Sorry. So you see here the interruption of the costal of the thoracic wall. You see here some pneumoderma. You see here some pneumoderma. Okay, but if you look the radiograph, the lateral radiograph, we see some lung contusion and some the pneumoderma here. And also here is superimposed with the heart, but we don't have a massive pneumothorax that is concerning us. So this patient is having, yes, a flail chest. There is a pneumoderma, probably the pneumoderma is originating from some pulmonary lesions, definitely. Here the question is, do we need to proceed to surgery or not? I did advise this colleague to keep the dog monitored and to maybe to apply a bandage that just to sustain the thoracic wall and to help the reabsorption of the pneumoderma. And this dog at the end didn't need surgery. So you see that sometimes the conservative approach can be useful and can be used. Obviously, if this dog had deteriorated and had more severe thoracic picture, like pneumothorax or non-resolving pneumothorax, this dog would have needed exploration. So, full thickness defects of the chest wall that allow free air movement into the pleural space, they are called sucking chest wounds. They should be treated immediately by debridement and direct suturing to reestablish the pleural space integrity. So, which means even if we have deeper lesion like disruption of the costal arch and you have an open wound, the first thing that you need to do in the emergency is to flush the wound and close the wound, ignoring the rupture, the fracture of the cord of the ribs, for example. You need to close the chest and eventually place a chest drain to drain the pneumothorax. And then in the following, if this happens in the night, for example, and then you can easily wait until the morning and proceed to a better exploration of the thorax and reconstruction of the thoracic wall. Animals presenting with bite injuries should be, again, closely monitored. If ventilation is inadequate, then you need to explore and detect the real cause. Because, again, sometimes you see this dog. This dog has multiple bite wounds here and here and here. So it's a polytrauma. But below these little wounds, there might be a disaster which needs to be surgically debrided. And again, if this dog is a dog that doesn't cope with the breeding or the breeding deteriorates and you see that your pneumothorax is not resolving, then this is a patient that might need to land on the surgery table for exploration and the repair of the damage. We said that 55% of the thoracic trauma, the blunt trauma, has pulmonary contusion. And pulmonary contusion can cause hypoxemia. So you will see your patient that is not coping. The respiratory pattern is worrying. You are worried about, you are concerned about it, but you don't see any pneumothorax, for example, or you don't find in the x-rays any hemothorax. You need to consider the possibility of the presence of a pulmonary contusion. And pulmonary contusion is something that you cannot do much about apart from support the patient and try to stabilize the gain, supplement oxygen. And the pulmonary contusion can improve in the following hours, but can also deteriorate. So usually it develops in the following 24 hours. So be careful with also fluids, because if we overload the patient with fluids and they have an active bleeding within the pulmonary parenchyma, the bleeding might get worse. Okay, we could have a deterioration of the hemorrhage, and then obviously the patient will not breathe properly, will not exchange gas properly. So these bad cases are cases that at the end needs to put under general anesthesia and ventilated with a ventilator, because there is no way that they can breathe with alveoli full of blood. So arterial blood gas monitoring is important, just to see how they can exchange the gas, and supportive care. Remember, the signs of the pulmonary contusion may become evident even over 24 hours after the trauma. This is an example. For example, for the repetition. There, you see that we have a radiograph, a dorsoventral radiograph, where you see consolidation of the lung lobe on the left side. And you see also in the CT, you see this even worst, the consolidation of the lung lobe, some hemorrhage. Okay, here we can imagine probably some costal fracture, and at the exploration you see how the lung lobe look like. This is something that itself, if you don't see lung perforation, this lung lobe doesn't need to come out. Okay, but if there are perforation or bad lesion, then you will need to perform a lung lobectomy. So again, we can have costal fractures or sternal fractures, and these patients are very painful. The only presence of the fracture limit the expansion of the chest, so you will have a constrictive respiratory pattern, you will have tachypnea and very shallow breathing, therefore the respiration is compromised due to the pain. If we have the fracture of the ribs in the cranial region of the thorax, then we might also need to consider potential trauma to the heart. So these patients should have an ECG, because you know you can have cardiac arrhythmias or premature ventricular complex due to myocardial trauma. If we have fracture of the caudal ribs, then you might think more to some possible trauma in the abdomen. Look at the also the diaphragm, if there is a diaphragmatic hernia. With costal fracture, the sternal recumbency is more comfortable for these patients, and they might have a flayed chest, so a section of a part of the thoracic wall which moves independently from the rest, and they might feel better if with a flay side down. With the flay side down, yes. And this because we limit the excursion of the flayed chest, limiting the pain and limiting also further injury. We can think about to support flayed chest with a bandage, but keep in mind that the bandage can decrease the compliance of the chest. So you need to decide case by case if a bandage is something that can help or not. Here again we see an example, again a radiograph dorsoventral, and you see here these are ribs which are fractured very clearly, and you also see you see what I'm showing you with the arrow is the skin, and all below, underneath the skin, we have a lot of free hair. So this is what we call pneumoderma. Pneumoderma that is going here along the legs, and we can see also on the other side, on the contralateral side, a mild pneumoderma. So in this patient, you need to understand where the air is coming from. Either it's coming from, usually it comes from the chest, because probably there is a puncture or lesion of the lung parenchyma. You also see there is a pneumothorax here. It is very difficult to have a pneumoderma with cutaneous wound. There must be really penetration of the chest wall and injury of the lung parenchyma itself. So this patient requires possibly surgical exploration once stabilized. This other one is a cat, and you see here the sternal fracture. So again, what to do here, it depends on the cat. So usually sternal fracture, we can attempt to repair them, but it depends on the respiratory pattern of the cat. Is certainly something that you don't need to do as an emergency, so you can give the animal time to see how it copes, how it will be recovered from the trauma, and then decide eventually to repair the sternum. But usually something that I don't do. The next one is a case where, just to show you that is important to take maybe at least two views of the chest, because in a lateral view you might oversee due to the superimposition, you might oversee costal fractures that you can see in the dorsal ventral. Usually the dorsal ventral view is easier to be taken because the patient is less stressed. If the patient is in sternal, you can provide oxygen, you can position it with Sansex, and then you can take your radio. It's not very important the perfect positioning. Try to do your best without stressing the animal, and then you can really see if there are fractures that you couldn't see in the lateral view, which by the way gives you information about the presence of some pneumothorax, which is confirmed by the CT scan here. So this is a case with flayed chest. This dog was bitten, and you see the flayed chest is in this area. And what happens when the animal inspires, so during breathing in, actually the chest wall should expand, but in the reality what happened is that this part of chest wall, because it's separated from the rest, is sucked in. Okay, so this is the paradoxical movement of the chest wall. And if you check the X-rays of this patient, again we see here clearly the fracture of the ribs and separation of the entire segment, which you can also see on the lateral view. And if we look at the rest of the thorax, so there is no evidence of pneumothorax, but maybe there is some lung contusion. Okay, this dog might require because there is no much trauma inside the chest, but it's just the thoracic wall. Maybe this dog can be treated conservatively. It depends on the progress of the clinical signs. This is a bit more severe if you look at this CT scan reconstruction. The CT scan is something that can be very useful to understand the extension of the lesion. So we see this is a transverse section. We are in the caudal part of the chest, and you see here where I'm showing you with a green arrow the fracture ribs with disruption of the muscles of the thoracic wall, so the internal and external intercostal muscles are disruptured. We have pneumoderma, which is the black thing here, black area here and here, also in this transverse section. And we don't even know if here you see this area. This is a chest drain, for example. And this, we don't know if this is lung parenchyma or just muscles from the thoracic wall which are invading now the chest. This is definitely a patient needing exploration. And you see here in the 3D reconstruction, you can clearly see the fracture of the ribs. okay, which gives you more information and possibly help you in the planning of your surgery. Okay, this is the case where you see the disruption of the chest wall, fracture of the rib, and this dog was bitten by another dog, disruption of the muscles, and if we go deeply inside the thoracic cavity, again you see the fracture rib here, one of the fracture ribs, and here I'm showing you with my thumb forceps the puncture of the lung parenchyma, which needs to be addressed. So if surgical exploration is required, clearly we have the problem of anesthetizing the patient, and ventilation is needed, or assisted ventilation, mechanical or manual assisted ventilation, in the event that a pneumothorax develops intraoperatively. You need to incise the skin over the area of where the biggest wound is present, and you need to assess the soft tissue, you need to dissect them carefully, maybe stump, you need to look at the amount of devitalized tissue, the amount of necrosis, the amount of contamination. You will probably need to take a swab for culture, for aerobic and anaerobic, from the deep tissue, so that you can give the correct antibiotic. In the meantime, whilst you're waiting for the results of the culture, you can cover these patients with a broad spectrum antibiotic like amoxiclav or cefalexin. You see again, so the ribs that might be stripped off from the muscles. So you will need to reconstruct this part of the chest with the tissue that is remaining. It's not advised to reconstruct this area using meshes or implants, because there is a strong predisposition of this patient to develop infections. The lungs should be inspected for perforation. Eventually, lung lobectomy is required. The thorax needs to be lavaged abundantly. And then before closing everything, you will need a thoracic drain. So the necessity for reconstruction or stabilization. The problem is how to reconstruct chest wall which is disrupted in such a manner, so severely. There are different modalities, but basically, as I was mentioning before, you need to use the tissue that you have in place. You need to remove all the necrotic tissue, and you need to use the remaining ribs as a scaffold. Remember that you can remove ribs up to a maximum number of 6. So you can reconstruct the thoracic wall despite you don't have the ribs available to do it. But if you have some ribs, you can use this technique, which is called basket wave, and it consists in the placement of sutures which encircle alternatively the ribs. So basically, I can show you here. Oh, where is the arrow? I can show you in the schema. So basically, in the drawing, you see these two ribs are hold together by an encircling suture proximally distally, and then there is a second suture which overlap and encircle the following two ribs. And you do such a pattern, and in such a way you should be able to reconstruct. Usually when you have 2-3 ribs fractured, you should be able to close the defect easily. If there are larger fragments that you need to remove, like up to 4, 5, 6 ribs, like for example also in oncological surgery, you might need reconstruction techniques like the use of muscle flaps, which I was planning to discuss with you in the last bit of this presentation. If you have a flat chest and you don't need to explore, you might consider to use this kind of method. Is basically you need like an external splint, which you fix a suture around the ribs in this manner. Basically, with the suture, you go transcutaneously around the rib, circumcostal, and then with the suture, you come out through holes in the splint, and then you keep it in place for a couple of weeks or 4 weeks. And this is pretty similar to the technique that is used to support to address the pectus excavatum in cats, which I have reported here just for to clarify better how do you do. So if you take the external rigid splint and you drill holes, you should drill multiple holes because you need to be able to choose which hole you can choose where you pass your suture. Then you take a non-absorbable suture material like proline, and you go around. This is the sternum, but think about this translated to the ribs, and you go around circumcostal transcutaneously around the rib, and then you have the thread here and here, and this thread goes one part goes through one hole and the second stump goes to the second hole, and then you make a knot, and you do this along the length of the ribs. So you will need like 2 or 3 sutures to keep the splint in place. If you know that you have to go in theater with these patients, then one of the most important things is the instrumentation. You need to have the surgical instrumentation because it's pointless to start a thoracotomy with or planning a lung lobectomy if you don't have the material to do it. So at least you need some rib distractors, the finocchietto ones. Usually the approach is intercostal on the lateral side. You should have some vascular forceps in case you encounter some hemorrhage during surgery. And you should have maybe you can do a lung lobectomy with manual suturing, but if you have staples, this makes your life much easier. And you shouldn't approach a thoracotomy on your own. You should have someone helping you, someone monitoring the anesthesia, and someone helping you in theater, because the main thing, the secret of success is really the teamwork. Working alone, I understand, is sometimes a necessity or is a condition, but if you think that you want to do something like that, I would consider to have someone helping you, again with anesthesia and with the surgery itself. So this is another example. So bite wound, disruption of the wall. You can see the ribs. The ribs are avulsed from the muscle. Muscles are completely destroyed. And then if you look deeper inside the chest, you see that there is also a lung lobe laceration. So in this lobe, there is no way that you can suture this lung lobe. This lung lobe is cause of recurrent pneumothorax or non-resolving pneumothorax, and this lung lobe needs to be removed. So lung lobectomy is necessary. And this is a situation after the lung lobe resection. So this is the diaphragma, this is the heart, and this is where we have removed the lung lobe, and this is the situation prior the reconstruction of the thoracic wall. In this case, for example, so the reconstruction here actually was fine, went easily. But for example, you see you have the diaphragma here, and eventually, if you don't have sufficient muscles to reconstruct everything, you could use the diaphragma with the diaphragmatic advancement to close the thoracic defect. And this is something that I show you in one of the last slides, how it works exactly. This is Cleo. Her history is a bit sad, but it's an happy end story. Her owner had a the mother of the owner died that day, and the owner decided to go for a walk with her, and Cleo just decided to run into a bush, and she got really impaled with a bush, and she had a piece of bush entering through the chest in lat, going through the thoracic, through the right thorax, and through the right thoracic wall, causing laceration of the lung lobe. This is a flail chest, and perforated also the diaphragm, and perforated also the pancreas. So I think I have here the X-ray of Cleo. You see here this diaphragmatic perforation with some herniation of hepatic parenchyma. You see here that we have some pneumothorax, but it's not dramatic. But in the reality, you must think she had at the level of the chest inlet, she had like an open wound of roughly like 10 to 15 centimeters with direct access of the hair into the chest. And then there was, so in this picture, you see here, this is a piece of wood. This is part of the bush that has, from the inside, from the right hemithorax, has perforated the chest wall toward the outside. So basically, the lesion, the branch came through the chest inlet into the right hemithorax, and then a branch of the this piece of wood just perforated the chest wall towards the outside, and this is after removal. And this dog needed reconstruction of this part of the chest wall, reconstruction of the diaphragm, and also needed lung lobectomy, and also needed I think I have images here. So this is the lung lobe rupture laceration, which need to come out. This is the perforation in the diaphragm. We are here in the abdomen. This is the liver perforation in the diaphragm. Here, the perforation through the pancreas. So it was basically a two cavity surgery, open chest and open abdomen to repair everything, but she recovered well and she went home a week later. So she was very lucky. This is another one, bite wound. I think it's the X-ray that I showed you before, and this dog, because of these bite wounds here and here, this is a patient where you need to consider exploration, just because in the best case scenario, you have the fracture of the ribs, okay, which you don't have to fix surgically, but the wound itself needs to be debrided, needs to be flushed, and needs probably also a culture from the deep tissue needs to be taken. And then you will see that once you explore this area, you will find a big hole in the chest, and then you have to explore the lungs and decide what to do with the lungs. Another one, bitten by a larger dog, and he had also avulsion of the right brachial plexus. A couple of bite wounds here, but mainly you need to look at the chest wall. He had a flail chest again. You see it here. Okay. and this one underwent also surgical exploration. I think it's the next slide with the video number 5, and I show you what we found in the. Okay, so this is the approaches from the is an intercostal approach exactly where the flail chest was present, and this is the condition of the lung. The lung lobe is pretty traumatized. It's the right cranial lung lobe. Below you we have the heart, and now the question is, what shall we do with this lung lobe? Is something that needs to come out or not? I would say yes. Let's see what we see in this video number 6. I would say yes, because you see, if you do the test of the like you do with a bicycle, the tiles of the bicycle, and you fill the chest cavity with sterile saline, and then you ventilate the dog, you will see these bubbles. These bubbles are indicative that there is a leak from the lung lobe, and this is the cause of the pneumothorax, and probably the pneumothorax will not resolve if you do not address the lesion in the lung. And because suture in the lung usually doesn't work, this is again part of the lung that needs to be removed via lung lobectomy. So once you have done this and you have flushed, you have taken your swabs for culture and you have flushed the thoracic cavity, then you need to reconstruct and to close the defect. And before closing everything, you need to place a chest drain. Okay, the chest drain will help you to evacuate the iatrogenic pneumothorax postoperatively, and also eventually serosanguineous pleural effusion that will develop in the 24 hours after surgery. So I think, yes, then when you have placed your chest drain, I would recommend you take X-rays, radiographs, always if possible two views, because the radiographs tell you how is the chest drain placed. In case it doesn't work, you know how it exactly placed. Here the chest drain is a myelize indicated with a yellow arrow, and let's see if I go back, so you see it here. Okay, and it's pretty good, the positioning, because it will really allow to remove all the fluids, that the pleural effusion. And then if you look better, where I have indicated with the red lines here, I go back for you. So if you look, there is the line of the staples following following the lung lobectomy. So keep in mind, whenever you see something similar, do not exchange this, above all if it's in the abdomen, do not exchange this for a foreign body. Look into the history and think if there has been a staple device has been used in the past. So the pleural effusion can be a complication after thoracic wall reconstruction or resection, and therefore the thoracic drain should be maintained until this effusion collection reduces markedly. I mentioned before, the pleural effusion tends to develop within the 24 hours or even 48 hours after surgery, and usually declines within 5 days. Keep in mind that apart from the chest drain, which you see here in this dog, this is not a traumatic patient, this is an oncological patient, and she underwent a massive thoracic wall excision. So we have the chest drain because we have an open chest, but we have also to think about to place an active drain underneath the skin, because this patient will probably develop also a seroma or wound secretion collection in the hours post surgery. So if you are in doubt, better to place one. If it's useless, okay, you can remove it, but if the wound is productive, then the active drain will help you definitely in the management of the in the post-operative management of the wound. The post-operative period after the thoracic wall surgery is critical. I think it's clear why, and the monitoring must be very close and very anything can happen in the following 24, 48 hours from hemorrhages, pneumothorax, acute pneumothorax, or tension pneumothorax, even if it happens seldom, also thromboembolism, and they die within 5 seconds, basically. They need to be, so you need someone monitoring them. You cannot think to leave them on their own during the night without being monitored. Or if you don't have the possibility, you might need to refer to someone who has the constant monitoring, someone looking after these patients. So the management of the pain is very important. They are very, very painful. So, and you, we realize that controlling the pain is one of the major things, because if they are stressed, because they are in pain, they cannot ventilate properly. If they cannot ventilate properly, they go in hypoxemia, which is already a problem because of the thoracic trauma. So try to manage to control the pain as better as you can. Supplement oxygen, and obviously, if we have a chest drain, you need to drain it regularly. So at the beginning, I would say I always give instruction to evacuate the chest drain every 15 minutes and record the amount of fluid or air that you retrieve. And if the amount of the air or fluid that you retrieve reduces, then from the 15 minutes you can go to every half an hour or every hour or every 2 hours. So in the good cases, we just after a couple of days we drain these dogs every 8 hours, and if the production is really minimal, then we remove the chest drain. What I do is, before removing the chest drain, to do an X-ray, a radiograph, to check how the thorax looks like, just to be on the safe side. In terms of controlling the pain, apart from the post-operative pain management, which is very important, the perioperative and the intraoperative pain management is fundamental. So one thing that I used to do, that I do, is, for example, once I approach, this is something that I do in each thoracotomy, intercostal or by a sternotomy, is the injection of local anesthetic in the to do a block of the intercostal nerve. And I do it exactly where I have placed these red stars here. So you have the 7th, 8th, and the 9th intercostal space. Let's say that we want to approach the chest in the 8th intercostal space, then we inject the local anesthetic at the level of the 1 or 2 ribs caudal to the intercostal space that we want to enter, and in 1 or 2 ribs cranial to the intercostal space that we want to enter. So basically, if you want to go in the 8th, you inject your anesthetic, local anesthetic, at level of the caudal surface of the 7th rib, and maybe at the caudal surface of the 6th rib. Then you inject it at the caudal level of the caudal face of the 8th rib, 9th, and 10th. And in this way, you have a good block which will anesthetize the area furtherly. Why caudally? Caudally because the vascular nervous trunk is placed on the caudal, along the caudal surface of the rib. And where do you inject it? Very proximally, exactly where I put the stars, the red stars, because this is the junction that is called costovertebral junction is the articulation between the vertebras and the ribs, and at that level is the origin of the intercostal nerve. So if you inject exactly where I'm signing with a green arrow, you will be sure that you anesthetize the entire nerve, intercostal nerve, in its entire length. Before injecting, you need to retrieve and see if there is some blood comes in, because if there is some blood, means that you are in the intercostal vein or artery, so you need to change the position, because you don't want to inject the local anesthetic in the vessels. Other options are showed in the next slide, so we can use this is an epidural catheter. We can use on your right left side, an epidural catheter is a catheter that goes in the epidural space, and morphine is injected every 8 hours, and this controls the pain very well. There is a risk of infection, so it must be done in a sterile way, in an aseptic way, possibly all with the same person should do it. So this is a very good way of controlling pain. Otherwise, we have the traditional constant rate infusion of ketamine or medetomidine or morphine, or a combination, lidocaine, or a combination of ketamine, a combination of morphine, lidocaine, morphine and lidocaine and ketamine. It depends on their requirements. And also, apart from the costal rate infusion, we still have the methadone that can be injected every 4 to 6 hours on top of this. And there are also the patches, like fentanyl patches, that can be used, which are also very useful. Obviously, patients in this condition have to stay hospitalized, and they cannot go home. So, in terms of thoracic wall reconstruction, our main goals are clearly, as I have already mentioned, is to restore the integrity of the pleural space, and keep in mind that, as I said, we can remove up to 6 ribs, but when we remove a large number of ribs, we might not be able to close the defect, so we might need to use other techniques which I have anticipated, like the use of muscle flaps. The most frequent muscle flaps that we use to close thoracic defects are the latissimo dorsi muscle, sometimes the external abdominal oblique, which you see here in this slide. We have also the transversus abdominis, but the second most frequent is the diaphragma when you do the diaphragmatic advancement. Okay, these muscles are very good to because they are thick and they can reconstruct the thoracic wall properly. So one that I like a lot, and I have mentioned at the beginning and I wanted to show it to you, is the diaphragmatic advancement. And this can be the diaphragma can use when the most caudal part of the chest needs to be excised or removed for whatever reason, trauma or neoplasia. And because the diaphragma insert on the costal arch and you are removing the ribs where originally the diaphragma is inserted, you can just move the diaphragma from the original insertion to a more cranial insertion. In this way, the volume of the thoracic cavity will decrease. So usually nothing happens if you advance the diaphragma of 3-4 ribs, but if you advance it of 6 ribs, something like that, possibly there won't be room for the lung lobe, so possibly you will have to remove a lung lobe. And you see here the this image after excision of 6 ribs. This was a tumor, and you see this is the liver, this is actually the abdominal content, and the diaphragm has been advanced and suture at the level of the 8th rib with a continuous, simple continuous suture. Another muscle which I use very frequently is the latissimo dorsi muscle flap, and it is a muscle that originates from the lateral chest wall, and it extends in dorsocaudal direction, from ventrodorsal and craniocaudal direction, and you see it's very big, it's a very large muscle which can be dissected at the distal insertion along the spine, and then can be rotated downwards of 90 degree or 180 degree. And this muscle can be used for thoracic defects which are more cranially, so around 5, 6, 4, 5, 6, 7 rib when these are removed. And you just need to find it, obviously, and detach it from the spine, and then suture it so that it closes the defect. So I want to show you just a case. This is a tumor. It was an osteosarcoma. This is the mass, which was involving more than, I think, 5 or 6 ribs. So everything is removed. And this is the diaphragm. So on your left side is the chest, and on the right side is the abdominal cavity. So after we remove the again, you see here, after we are removing the tumor, again you have chest cavity, lung, diaphragm, abdominal cavity. So we are removing all this, and then we are in this situation. Okay, so this diaphragm, which was originally attached at the rib that was at this level, now has no bony scaffold anymore. So what we do is the diaphragmatic advancement. So the diaphragm is sutured to the first rib here, which was the 8th. But previously we need to place a chest drain to evacuate the iatrogenic pneumothorax. And I think we have the next image, which is the one that I showed you before. So now we have the diaphragm suture to the 8th rib, and now we have the liver and the entire abdominal organs with a huge defect at this level. How do we close this defect? We close it using the latissimo dorsi muscle, which we go and we dissect it, and is a chunky muscle, very resistant, and can be stitched like this, okay, with simple interrupted suture going to close the defect. Now we have a chest drain here for the thoracic cavity, and now when we close the skin, we need to think about that this area might be an area of that space with seroma building, so we will need also an active drain place subcutaneous to drain the possible seroma. And this is our doggy. This is one day after surgery, and this is with the epidural catheter, which was controlling very well the pain. This is the mass that was removed. So yes, I think with the muscle flap I'm at the end of my talk, and I would like to thank you for your attention, and I'm also happy to answer your questions if you have any. Thank you.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Daniela for a great presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.